Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We are going to wallow in sorrow for a second straight week as the Buffalo Bills fell short in the last waning seconds of a game that they had no business being in at all, kind of the whole way through, against the Houston Texans in NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas. And the Stephon Diggs revenge matchup is complete with Stephon Diggs' squad coming out on top. Josh Allen looking absolutely pitiful, and I don't know what to do with my hands, Dan.
That's such a good Talladega Nights reference. I have been watching that movie almost nonstop for some reason. It's always on TV when I turn it on. Freaking Ricky Bobby, all-time great NASCAR driver. What was not all-time great, JJ, was the performance out of the Bills in this game. And it's interesting for a lot of reasons, but I think most notably, if you are a believer in that Stephon Diggs forced his way out of there because his relationship with Josh has deteriorated, because the coaching staff didn't seem to value him in the scheme anymore, and because he didn't have confidence that this was the staff that was going to get them over the Kansas City Chiefs hump, everything around Diggs' departure was proven to be on the side of Stephon in this game. Josh had his worst game as a pro. Set an NFL low mark for passing percentage, completion percentage, with 30 attempts or more over. Stephon Diggs literally outgained every single wide receiver's combined reception yards total from Josh on the Buffalo Bills offense. 82-74, and that included a 49-yard TD run reception by Keon Coleman. That includes that long run. JJ, this one came up all Stephon Diggs. That's not the part I'm most salty about, and this is where I want to start with you. This feels like a season after season of broken record. It feels like we're caught in the same cycle year after year after year. Bills get off to a hot start. They inexplicably lose a couple of games, seem to lose all semblance of what their identity is offensively and defensively, an injury here, a penalty there, and they're right back to being 500 at some point in the middle of the season, needing to win out in order to even be competitive in the division. We saw it last year. We saw it the year before. We saw it in 2021. Like, I don't know what it is, because they've turned over the roster. They've turned over the coordinator spots. I am led to believe that we are on this same roller coaster ride of ebbs and flows because of our head coach 8 years in. I want to start talking about the coaching decisions that were made in this game, particularly at the end of the game, with the way that final Bills possession and regulation was handled when they were backed up into their own territory and chose to pass three times.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can start there. It was terribly, terribly mishandled. I think that, you know, it's like the classic Marv Levy quote, you know, when you call a play and it doesn't work, you should have done the other thing, is a way that I think that Sean McDermott could have played that off. Because I guess if I'm going to play devil's advocate, in this regard, Sean McDermott is the devil, that putting the ball in Josh Allen's hands and saying we absolutely need to get a first down and the best way to do that is passing the ball, I get the logic. The part of it that is absolute asinine to me and mismanagement is that to that point in the game, Josh Allen and the offense in general, the wide receivers in particular, the offensive line in particular, and then Josh Allen's actual decision making, all it had proven up to that point is that they were not going to get it done. And in the gotta have it moments, the offensive design was literally having Marquez Valdes-Scantling go one-on-one with an elite corner in Derek Stingley for like a comeback route, deep comeback. It was trying to feed a ball to Keon Coleman on a slant that he was the only person on the field who didn't know he was the hot read on. It was so disjointed, and Josh Allen was making very piss-poor decisions in addition to very poor throws. He was inaccurate over and over and over again. And I think that that's the thing that I want to like just note here is so much of Bills Mafia is like, this is Sean McDermott's fault. This is whatever. And I do think it is. I think that this is the same, you know, epidemic of issues and decision-making we've seen come up time and again. The Broncos game with, you know, too many men on the field, the Philadelphia Eagles game that they lost last year, 13 seconds, the playoff game against Houston, like various times that the Bills have played the wrong, exactly the wrong way or with the wrong orientation to win a game because they're kind of scared or cowardly or whatever the decisions are. That all being said, I think that in this scenario, the lack of management was just not recognizing that at this time and this place in the game, Josh Allen wasn't going to get it done for you. And I know, again, nobody wants to criticize Josh Allen because what he's done for the team, the city, he is amazing. You should know if you listen to this pod that I believe in him. But he had a really terrible game. He was making bad throws. And if I'm the coach, I need to recognize that my quarterback isn't doing it and do something else. Give it, hand it off to James Cook, hand it off to Ray Davis. I mean, hand it off to Ty Johnson. Like, just give the ball, do a jet sweep to Curtis Samuel, who's been completely ineffective. Like, do something else than just continuously throwing the ball three times, take 19 seconds off the clock, use none of the opponent's timeouts, and then give them a chance to go and kick the game-winning field goal, which, of course, they end up doing.
I could forgive taking a shot on first down. I really could, because Josh, to your point, had not had a good game at that point. The minute that they run 4 seconds off the clock with that play, and it's an incomplete pass, and they stop the clock, you have to be Sean McDermott being on your headset to Joe Brady and being like, yeah, we're running it. We need to make them use some of their timeouts. We need to put Sam Martin in a position where he can punt them way the hell out of field goal range. And we need to play for overtime. I mean, JJ, forget that passing the ball stopped the clock and didn't force Houston to use any of its timeouts and put them in very, very good field position. Like, there was also the high risk nature of some of those play calls and some of those past poor decisions that Josh made that could have led to a turnover deep in their own territory, which also would have solidified a defeat and regulation as well. That is the thing that last season you and I were saying. This is why we want to see Sean McDermott give up defensive play calling, because he is an excellent defensive coordinator, but he is not a great game decision manager. And being the defensive play caller is an additional distraction for him that he needs to give up. He's given it up. His entire focus should be on managing these decisions and managing these situations. And yet still we see failure after failure. And the failure is always a domino effect to me that starts with the coaches. Brady is really a first-time, brand-new offensive coordinator. I don't really count a lot of his stint in Carolina because of the dysfunction there, right? But he is still a young offensive play caller, calling plays largely for the first time as a head coach with game situation experience under your belt. You've got to get on the headset to your OC after you see that first pass and be like, no, this is not what we're playing for at this point. And it didn't happen. And I appreciate Sean McDermott taking accountability for that, because he needs to take accountability for that. But I'm also sick of hearing that same post-game speech over and over where we got to get better. JJ, they never get better in these situations. The Buffalo Bills under Sean McDermott, and this includes this year, are 11-15 in one score games. 11-15. The Denver game, the Minnesota game from 2 years ago, the Dayball Giants return game that they won somehow miraculously, but was littered with poor coaching decision and conservative and tight coaching. You can run down the list. The Jaguars game where they gave Urban Meyer one of his only two career wins that he'll ever have in the NFL. You can go over and over down the list. You are supposed to regress back to the mean season after season on one score games, because it's largely a luck metric. The Bills have been inherently unlucky in these situations over and over again, and it proves it in the stats. And to me, it is because we have a head coach that continually fumbles the bag in these situations. Like, there's a lot of reasons the Bills lost that game individually, but when you zoom out and you look at the larger trends, they continually lose these types of games because of the decisions of the coaching staff.
Sure. So, and I know you have that opinion, and you're not alone in that opinion. I think the voices about Sean McDermott not having the mettle to get it done in those key moments are absolutely loud. And, you know, maybe I'm just jaded because I don't disagree with those voices. I think that's absolutely true. I think there was that huge hit piece that Tyler Dunn did against Sean McDermott last year where he named, you know, anonymous sources, which take that for what it's worth. Talking about being in, you know, close proximity to Sean McDermott, being on the team, former employees, former players, et cetera, saying that Sean McDermott coaches scared, that he's always so tight and tense and like he grips too hard and then he makes mistakes. And I don't know how true the quotes were, whatever he referenced in that article, but it's observable. Like it's what we've seen. And I think that your points about being so, you know, poor in one score games is absolutely valid. And this is the part that I referenced about being jaded. He's the winningest coach in Bills history over Marv Levy, over Chuck Knox, over championship caliber coaches for the Bills. He reports to Terry Pegula, who is not Jerry Jones, does not have a super strong voice, as far as we know, in the room with managing this team and how they function, how they operate. Tends to leave things to his team to determine on a day by day basis. And Sean McDermott, through the course of his winning ways, has brought the team to four consecutive AFC East championships, to the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years. There are 6 of the last 7. There's all kinds of things you can point to say that he is one of the most successful coaches in the NFL. That is true. It can also be true that he absolutely bungles big moments and critical and makes up decisions that result in critical losses. The part that worries me, and I think is absolutely true, I'd bet money on this, is that Sean McDermott is going to remain the Buffalo Bills coach because of his personal relationship with Brandon Bean, because Terry Pegula likes winning, but, you know, and doesn't seem to be the kind of owner who's going to just like axe the leadership if they cannot get over the hump, as long as they're continuously winning the AFC East and going to the playoffs, et cetera, winning a playoff game every year. I just think that Sean McDermott is going to work his way through Josh Allen's prime, and he will be fired after Josh Allen is no longer an elite quarterback, maybe after he retires and can't cover up for his errors and blunders. Sean McDermott's going to have his own coaching tree. He's going to produce head coaches like Daboll who go out and coach elsewhere, which is going to add to his legacy, however tarnished it may be. And I just think that's the story of this team and Sean McDermott and he'll probably finish his career in Buffalo as the winningest coach in Buffalo Bills history. And, you know, maybe people look back on time fondly because it was great to have Josh Allen as your quarterback and they did win AFC East over and over, and they did win playoff games. I just don't think he's got it to win a championship. If he is the absolute decider in any moment that results in them winning or losing a Super Bowl, they will lose it because of Sean McDermott. It will have to be the kind of thing where Doug Peterson, his ineptitude as a coach, could not overcome the incredible resilience and team spirit of that locker room in Philly when they beat the Patriots to get them that win. You know what I mean? Like it in the event where it comes down to McDermott, they'll lose.
I think, and you know, I put this take out into the ether on social media. We got some really interesting listener interaction stuff on this. And JJ, you brought up a point early on about McDermott effectively raising the floor of this organization with culture and with winning and the production they've had in the regular season. And there, listen, I got a lot of very awesome and challenging takes that were in opposition to my take that we needed to move on from McDermott. McDermott, up until this season, from 2021 to 2023, has had I'll even include the COVID season of 2020 if you want to. He has had top 10 offensive and defensive units by DVOA, by efficiency, by success rate, by EPA. Pick your metric. How many other head coaches in NFL history have had consistently teams performing at that high of a level execution-wise that haven't been able to make at least one Super Bowl, right? The question you're asking, we have to ask ourselves, isn't who is going to replace the floor McDermott has given us? Because I think it's valid, but I think it's the wrong way to approach it, because there's a lot of high floor setting coaches you could find. Who is going to raise the ceiling on this team and finally get him over the hump? Because I think McDermott has hit his ceiling with his decision-making. And when you really look at the defensive output of this Buffalo Bills team, they are good in overall metrics, which they should be, because this is a defensive-minded head coach that has his fingerprints on the scheme. But when you isolate their games in the postseason or regular season against winning QBs like Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, the numbers are far less favorable. To me, this is a coach that has absolutely hit his ceiling with this squad. This is a roster that has hit its ceiling with him guiding it. You need someone who's going to be able to take it to that next level and not just figure out a way to beat the Trevor Lawrences and the Daniel Jones of the world.
Well said. I don't disagree with any of your points. And I still stand pat on my belief that the decision will have to be made by Terry Pegula, because essentially Sean McDermott hired Brandon Bean. And so I don't see Brandon Bean turning on Sean McDermott. And so it really is a question of what is Terry Pegula as the owner? What is his kind of threshold for failure in the postseason? How determined is he to bring a championship to Buffalo? Because if they go to the playoffs this year and exit at the hands of Baltimore, Cincinnati, or Kansas City again, you know, will that move the needle at all? Or is it a matter of, oh, yeah, we'll get them next time, and they just go back and recycle the same thing? And we as Bills fans are stuck in this loop of having a team that, like, every, you know, so many fan bases would be so jealous of, oh my gosh, must be nice to be a Bills fan. You win the division every year. You go to the playoffs, you play, you know, you have something to play for late in the season. It's always exciting. Josh Allen's amazing. You know, the defense has young superstars coming up. That's all cool. But the real question is, you know, what's it all matter if they're still one of the four franchises in the NFL who's never gotten a championship?
Oh, right. Exactly. Right. I mean, what is it all for at that point? JJ, you're right. I don't think anything changes with McDermott. And we have been on this stomach churning roller coaster with the Bills before, where they string together some inexplicable losses. They sink to 500 when really they should be 5-1 or 7-2. They say our back's against their wall. We've been here before. We know we need to get better. And they need to go on some sort of impossible run to make the postseason and win the division. We saw it last year. We saw it in 2021. We know that this is a QB that is capable of this, right? I just wish we didn't always have to do it this way. You know what I mean? Because the end result is exhausting to get there and then ultimately deflating when you are taken down by one of these superior teams with superior coaching and superior play. Like, it's just, it's the same story over and over again. And nothing is going to change unless you change the author of that story. And right now that author is Sean McDermott, right? So I don't want to make it all about Sean, because you're right. Like, there's also a lot of poor execution by the Bills on the field in this game. I want to get your take a little bit, starting with the offensive side of the ball. We've talked about Josh, not one of his better games. It was JJ. It felt like watching this game, particularly in the first half, it was the same calamity of errors we have seen under Daboll at certain points, Dorsey, and now Brady, where a penalty here, a hold here, a false start there, two Dalton Kincaid drops here, a Keon Coleman drop, and all of a sudden Josh is really pressing to get something done and has one of his most inaccurate games. We've seen that script play out before, and that's exactly how it played out, particularly in the first half. What were your observations, JJ, of this offensive performance against the Texans?
So the Texans play single high safety, middle of the field close defense. It is the same type of defense that the Ravens proved was effective against the Bills. When you're playing that defense, you're inviting the team to pass outside the numbers against you. And so it's really, you know, as an offense, your best tactic to beat that defense is to throw to your outside receivers and count on them to beat one-on-one matchups with outside corners, because there tends to be, you know, not a lot of help outside and safety wise, or it's a zone that's dropping into three deep coverage with each corner covering a third of the field and the safety covering the middle third, with one of the safeties brought down in the box to kind of help muddy things up there. That has proven to be absolute kryptonite for Joe Brady and Josh Allen. And unless they find a way to beat it, I do not see anything changing. I think the Bills will have a real hard time against the Jets this upcoming week, because that team can play whatever coverage they need to. And so what I observed is the Bills, I mean, you know, this was the Stephon Diggs revenge game in terms of he proved the Bills do not have an outside receiver who can beat one-on-one any corner that's of decent, of average or better rate. And when they cannot, they're kind of neutered as an offense. As you mentioned in the open, Josh Allen has his worst game as a professional football player. You know, end of statement. And the Buffalo Bills had no answers. I think that for me, I think that the first thing they need to do is cut Mac Hollins' snaps way down. I don't care how much of a good blocker he is.
It's inexplicable that he is getting this snap share.
Trash.
It's inexplicable.
He should only be on the field for special team snap based on what he's shown as a wide receiver. He's not on the same page. He and Josh Allen do not have any chemistry, it seems. And he's a kooky guy. He's a cool story. I actually really love his like Mac Hollins Maintenance Minute videos on Instagram.
It's time management for October. It's amazing. Yeah, it's really cool.
No, he's awesome. Like as a person, I think he's wonderful. As a player, I don't think he's a good starting wide receiver. I just don't. I think that they need to give his snaps to literally anybody else to see if they have better chemistry and rapport with Josh Allen, because it's looked painful.
They do this all the time. They do this all the time. We've talked about Emmanuel Sanders because they just fell in love with him.
Yes.
And it took him 2 years, but they finally got him in. And he took valuable development time and snap share away from Gabe Davis at a point where it looked like Gabe Davis was ready to emerge. Same thing is happening now. They know they need to develop a wide receiver one. Granted, Keon Coleman is a project, but he is not going to learn any faster by not playing and ceding snaps to Mac Hollins.
Yep. And I think that's the same, too, with interestingly enough, while Khalil Shakir was healthy, he was giving up snaps to Mac Hollins and Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
We talked about it. Yeah, we talked about it in the preview for this game.
Complete idiocy. Like, I don't understand how you watch those three individuals play games and don't give 100% of the snap share to Khalil Shakir. It's just like it's baffling to me, and it just doesn't make sense. And the kind of thing where, like, I think of it in terms of, does Joe Brady not trust Khalil Shakir as a blocker and he wants to stick to the run? And that's period, right? Like, that's it.
I think that's interesting, because I think that has been, for the limited amount of time with his time at LSU and Carolina, has been the signature of Joe Brady as a play caller, is that he doesn't scheme for a specific guy other than a running back. That seems to be his comfort zone. And as a result, you've got some great concepts that the Bills are running, but we saw it. I mean, the broadcast even called it out. Keon Coleman's best route that he runs is that button hook, that curl that comes right back to the QB where he can create a little space against the defender and then use his big athletic body to block out smaller DBs while he makes a contested catch. Marquez Valdes-Scantling was getting some of those routes. Mac Hollins was getting some of those routes, and he's not nearly as polished at running them. Like, Brady seems to have good general pass concepts built into the playbook, but he has not yet aligned on what are the strengths of this personnel to execute on those concepts. So he's got everybody doing everything, but not everyone in that pass catching room is good at everything.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's really that's a concern that we had in the offseason. Will they be able to bring it together? I don't understand where Curtis Samuel is meant to fit into this offense, because they haven't been using him. They've been doing like little whip screens and sort of, you know, flare passes out to the flats that have been largely ineffective. as a player coming into this free agency, I think I was really excited about Curtis Samuel because he had the number one separation per route run of all free agent wide receivers available. And I'm sure that they bought that. They bought into that kind of ability. I don't know if it's his understanding of the offense. I don't know if it's his work ethic, his willingness. I don't know if he's lost a step because he's not an old wide receiver, but he's a little bit later in his career. I don't understand what's going on with Curtis Samuel in that he has predominantly been a slot, but he does have separation ability and he does not seem to separate anymore.
Yeah, it is wild how they're using him. And they invested money. Precious little free agent
$7 to $8 million per year for 3 years.
Yep. They like the very little free agency cap resources they have, they chose to allocate to this guy while they ate Stephon Diggs' dead cap hit this season. And he has not produced for them at any reasonable level yet. You can blame Brady for not scheming for him because it doesn't seem like Brady can scheme for anybody except James Cook. You can blame the toe injury he had earlier in the season, but it feels the further we get from that, the further off that is as a reasonable excuse. I mean, JJ, we've potted for a long time. We have the same conversation about different players every year. Like Trent Sherfield is out there somewhere looking at Matt Collins' snap share and was like, why couldn't I get that last season? Like we always get excited for some of these pieces they bring in and they just never know how to onboard or integrate. It is a continued problem no matter who the OC is, no matter what the offensive coaching staff is. They just don't know how to onboard new weapons into this offense.
I also, I think that talking more about the offense, I think that what you saw was when teams stacked the box to shut down the Bills' rushing attack. One, the Bills ran at 19 of 24 first downs, which is just not acceptable. You cannot be that predictable.
Super, super predictable and inefficient. Yeah.
And if you do, run it that often, and you get stuffed, then you're behind the sticks from there forward. And then just like clockwork, the team that stuffed you on your first down rushing attempt drops 7 or 8 into coverage the next snap because they know the pass is coming. And sure enough, just like clockwork, Joe Brady falls into that trap over and over again. So that's a problem. I think that the protection issues the Bills saw were not necessarily the one-on-one issues of Bills offensive linemen versus their matchup. More often, it was a procedural issue with Josh Allen not properly shifting protection or recognizing the blitz pickup or replacing the blitz with the ball, which is something he's been so good at through his career, but he just had a real bad game with almost all of that. He was not managing his own pressure very well. And when you couple that with, a handful of snaps, probably 5 or less snaps where somebody on the Bills offensive line was truly beaten handily and causing quick pressure in his face, it's kind of snowballed from there. I think that the offense was ineffective. I think that, the Keon Coleman touchdown, I texted you enthusiastically after that one because I think moments before that I said his ceiling is Mac Hollins' career because I just didn't see him be able to do anything.
I was half right about my prediction.
You were half right. I'm hopeful his ceiling is more what we saw in that play and less what we saw every other freaking play.
Yeah. I mean, listen, in summary, no one had a good game. The coaching staff. Josh didn't have a good game. Pass catchers didn't do him any favors. And I think what is so hard for Bills Mafia to swallow about this is that everything they said wouldn't go wrong when they undertook this roster retool and got rid of Stephon Diggs did go wrong in this game. JJ, I want to flip it to the defensive side of the ball, which is allegedly the strength of our head coach. And back-to-back weeks, he faces a better than average QB and CJ Stroud, a really up and coming young QB and CJ Stroud. And the defense is absolutely torched. And again, part of it, you cannot blame on the coaching staff because Stroud and Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator for the Texans, seemed very committed to attacking where the Bills were the weakest, which was Cam Lewis defending a crossing route and against Stephon Diggs in the middle of the field is going to be a Diggs win every time. And Sloak was able to find ways to get Lewis on Diggs on multiple occasions, even after Nico Collins went down. So props to Sloak. because that was one of the few bright spots of the game for him as a play caller, was the scheming for Diggs. But he generally, with the exception of his preponderance to run on first down inefficiently, made it easy for Stroud. Stroud faced blitzes, he faced pressure, and was accurate against both organic pressure, and he was incredibly accurate, JJ, and effective against the Buffalo Bills blitz when they decided to roll out more to get pressure on him. Both Josh Allen and CJ Stroud in this game faced pressure rates of over 40%. But CJ Stroud completed 31 of 38 pass attempts, and Josh completed 9 of 30. Part of it was Stroud taking advantage of what the Bills are giving him in the scheme, and part of it was, listen, JJ, their guys just beat our guys. Their offense just beat our offense. They were better. They were better. And I think it could be chalked up to something as simple as that. But what did you see on the defensive side of the ball for the Bills?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that certainly they were better. Their guys beat our guys. That's accurate. I think that the pressure that the Bills tried to bring, the biggest difference I saw between Slowik and Joe Brady was that Slowik always had a clear and obvious blitz beater schemed up in every kind of play call. I think that was the other piece of that was that CJ Stroud was very apt at identifying those blitzes and making sure that his wide receivers knew to trigger down on that blitz beater in the event that they saw their CB vacate or they saw the linebacker vacate the middle of the field. They knew where to fill to take advantage of the Bills' zone defense. And I just didn't see that from the Bills. Josh Allen didn't, you know, I mean, he was throwing balls that had no business going anywhere near the players that they were being thrown towards. He was missing open receivers who were good blitz beaters on good routes. So I think the scheme was probably 30 or 40% of the time was the problem on offense. Josh Allen was the problem 60% of the time. And then penetration on rushing plays, if we're talking about the rushing offense, was probably half of the problem. And then the timing of those rushing plays was the other half of the problem into why the Bills were so ineffective passing and then also so ineffective running. I just think, you know, the Bills defense, I got off track there. The Bills defense.
I was going to say, percentages.
Yeah.
I think 140% of the problem is what you were saying.
I was 100% of passing, and then I was 100% of rushing. So I did 100% of each. You know, they're two different phases, Dan. But the Houston Texans on offense were so much more efficient with their attempts because of the Bills' inability of personal matchups with Jamarcus Ingram and Cam Lewis, and then also Dorian Williams in coverage. I think that we saw Terrell Bernard's return and the interception he had late was an excellent play and shows what he can do that no other linebacker other than Matt Milano can provide to this defense. But largely, the Bills' secondary was toyed with in regards to Jamarcus Ingram and Cam Lewis in the slot. And then also having Cole Bishop fill in for Taylor Rapp exposed a vulnerability in the middle of the field. Cole Bishop missed, and this is the thing that I think was really disappointing for me was, and probably for you as well. Cole Bishop was one of the best tackling safeties coming out of this draft, and he was missing tackles left and right that were turning plays that could have been 1 or 2 yard losses into 40-yard gains. And that, I think that maybe the game's just a little too fast for him. He was taking bad angles, too amped up. I don't know what it was, but if he's going back in any sort of relief or starter duty in future games, I hope that he gets his tackling under control.
One can only hope. Although, listen, bad tackling has really been a hallmark of the McDermott defense since he took over. I mean, we always run into tackling issues, bad angles from our safeties, all that other kind of stuff. For as good as they are coaching those positions for whatever reason, tackling has not been a part of that package. So, JJ, here we are. We are in another Bills losing streak, this time earlier in the season than we're normally used to seeing it. I don't want to draw too many grand conclusions from this other than how long are we going to put ourselves through this same cycle over and over and over again? I don't want to hit the McD point anymore because I think we've hit it pretty thoroughly. But the Bills now, they're in a place where they have to beat the Jets. Otherwise, it's going to be what we've seen for years, which is they're going to drop to 3-3. The Jets somehow are going to take control of the AFC East if they can eke out a win against the Bills. And the Bills, I can already tell you what the postgame press conference is going to be if they lose to the Jets coming up. We've had our backs against the wall before. We know how to do this. We know how to rattle off wins. Yes, you knew how to do that when Milano was healthy, when you had Jordan Poyer, when you had an available Von Miller, when you had Micah Hyde. Those guys are not walking through the door anymore. This is a different roster. And I think for this Bills unit, I need to see them come out and play with some urgency, play with some purpose, and play with some intentionality on Monday night against an opponent that they've struggled with recently. Because if they are foolish enough to think, because they've done it before, they can do it again, I don't think there's only so many times you can go back to that well, JJ, and I don't think they've got the horses or right now the coaching staff to get them there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, I would say you're right about the Bills' ineffectiveness and the challenges and struggles that they've shown in the past against this opponent. Just looking at the Bills team that came out against Houston, it was such a pitiful showing that I think there's a bit of a bump that the Bills are going to have against the Jets in trying to just not be such a miserably poor team. And so I actually do see them competing at a much higher rate in the upcoming Monday night game, even though it is a more difficult opponent, in some regards, because I think in other regards, this Jets offense is pretty abysmal compared to the Houston Texans offense, even with the absence of Joe Mixon, that the Bills had the advantage of not having to face him. The Jets are disjointed. Aaron Rodgers is sort of a diva monster, you know, is, well, almost said bridezilla, but it just feels appropriate in this situation. And he's just going kind of buck wild with the ego. And so I think the Bills actually pull this one out, and we'll certainly get to that in our preview pod later in the week. But it's really, you know, for me, it's a question of, how good are they at washing this loss and making the bounce back that you mentioned we always experience where the Bills rattle off the six or seven straight wins? How good are they at making this week?
Yeah, because it's got to start this week.
Yes,
for sure. They don't want to go back to even with the Jets and be down a one game advantage heading into the remainder of their schedule. So it'll be interesting to see. JJ, ending things on a positive note, I will say this. After the Baltimore game, I was very clear that's not a team I want to see in January again. But Houston, for as bad as we played and as good as they played, that's a team that feels gettable to me if we see them again.
Yeah, I'd welcome that as a first-round or second-round matchup in the playoffs.
Absolutely. And then if we make the postseason and if we get that matchup and win, I want Josh to throw the sickest side eye at Diggs at the end of that game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. After dunking on him for four touchdowns.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. For all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.